custodians in the country. I am Bob Enyart, self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. What will the future of the human race hold? Well, we'll be talking about some of that today. And also, our Israel tour is coming up March 21st. And America is deploying an extra Patriot anti-missile battery in Israel just in time for our trip. So if you are at all hesitant, now is the time to call and sign up. We've got 14 people. Actually, we're trying to hear from two, from Billy Burns and Chet Miller. So if either of you guys are out there, give us a call here at the office. And if you'd like to call into the show, Mondays from noon to 2 Eastern Time, 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. All right. Also, I want to talk about cloning of a human being that's supposed to take place this year in the Mediterranean. And also, talking about where the world is going, molecular computers are one step closer. Computers that don't use silicon chips for etching the processors and transistors, but use individual molecules. So we'll be talking about that. We're closer to that. I'll make a prediction that our first molecular computers will be available for use in the year 2015. That's my prediction. Maybe 100,000 times faster than our current fastest computers. Also on the world scene, while Microsoft's chairman Bill Gates has just pledged $100 million to help develop an AIDS vaccine, the homosexuals in San Francisco are celebrating by doubling their rate of infection with HIV. Doubling their rate of infection, according to the San Francisco Department of Health, and they say this trend is matched by other cities around the country. We'll get into that. And then, finally, I'd like to end the show with a discussion of the NFL. Paul Harvey this weekend said one out of five NFL players has a criminal history, and the commissioner of the league is saying that's not true. If only America was as law-abiding as the NFL, we'd all be in great shape. Things would be much better. And I'm wondering, is this the right time for him to make a statement like that? With Ray Carruth guilty of murdering the mother of his child, and O.J. Simpson murdered the mother of his children, and Mark Chmura on trial for molesting his babysitter, and Ray Lewis, who's obviously guilty of murder, and it's certainly of perjury after the fact. So we want to get into that story at the end of the show. But first, I take our first call. We'll go to Indiana in a moment. But first, the Republican Party in Washington, D.C. has launched this new administration's time in office in a big way, holding a breakfast to honor homosexual Republicans. And this, they had some heavy hitters hosting the breakfast. National Republican Congressional Committee Chairman Thomas Davis of Virginia, he was the keynote speaker. They had former Republican Senator Alan Simpson from Wyoming. In fact, I've got a quote here from an interview he did with Human Events, which was interesting. But New York Governor, Republican Governor George Pataki, New York City Republican Mayor Rudy Giuliani, Republican Senator from Virginia John Warner, Republican Senator from Oregon Gordon Smith. How about this one? You know who else was on the host committee for the homos? Republican Presidential Counselor Mary Madeline. See, George W. Bush handpicked her to have his ear in matters of sensitive importance with national policy. All right, and just before I go to the call, I've got a clip here I want you to hear from a public school regarding this issue.
Mr. Garrison, can I ask you a question?
Well, of course, Stanley. What is it?
What's a homosexual? Oh, well, Stanley, I guess you came to the right person. Sit down. Stanley, gay people, well, gay people are evil. Evil right down to their cold black hearts, which pump not blood like yours and mine, but rather a thick, vomitous oil that oozes through their rotten veins and clots in their pea-sized brains, which becomes the cause of their Nazi-esque patterns of violent behavior. Do you understand?
I guess.
Good. I'm glad we could have this little talk, Stanley. Now you go outside and practice football like a good little heterosexual.
All right. That's, I believe that comes from some TV show, right? Some pro-homo TV show. You know, but even a broken clock is right twice a day. All right, so also a Reagan speechwriter was on the host committee, and he's currently a political strategist for the Republicans, Ken Kachigian, or Kachigian. And I think he might be the guy who wrote the line, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." He might be that guy. I'm going to keep my ears open to find out if that's who it is. Also, in this Human Events article, which you can find at WorldNet Daily today, we also find out that a homosexual Republican from California, Brian Bennett, organized a meeting of homosexual leaders with George W. Bush. And why not, right? George Bush Sr. was the first president ever to meet with homosexuals at the White House. So his son is, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, and he's done likewise. Dan Quayle was at that meeting also to show that they honor homosexuals. So that's, so the question will be, can our Republican administration handle the challenges facing the country and the world? We've got human cloning scheduled for this year. We've got homosexuals ever emboldened, and some crime stories here that should be great to start off our week. But let's go to the phones. Indianapolis, Rudy, speak your mind.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Hello, Rudy. I'm doing well. Hey, we had a Rudy call in some months back who was a public school teacher in Indianapolis.
That's me.
This is the same Rudy from Indy.
Yeah.
All right. Welcome.
All right. Well, I told you that I was going to get back with you.
Yes.
And within the time frame I said I'd get back, I ended up switching jobs.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
So are you at a different public school?
Oh, no, I'm doing web programming.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
All right, so you're out of there.
Yeah, I'm out of public school.
All right, what precipitated that?
Well, I think I told you that I've been wanting to get out of the public school system.
Right, we enjoyed having you in there as a mole.
Yeah.
You know, to let us know truly how bad it is.
Yeah, it's still, you know, about 3 years I spent there, I still did, you know, observe a lot of wickedness and that it's a wretched place you never want to send your kids to.
Yeah. What a shame that as many Christian parents as still do send their kids to public school. I talked to one at our church on Sunday. I pastor a church here in Denver, Damascus Road Bible Church,
yeah.
And one mom, the whole family was there, and they have their daughter in public school, and I urged her to take her out, and she said that she will, that this will be her daughter's last year in public school.
Huh. Well, that's good she's getting out.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Wow. Well, you have such an exciting show today. I won't take a lot of your time.
That's right.
But I did want to say that I appreciate how you expose the heart of that evil man from the seamless garment society.
Oh yeah. Oh, that was interesting.
Oh
the
yeah.
PETA guy.
You drew him out long enough, and then just exposed his heart. It was really good.
I really enjoyed that. You know, it started out the first 10 minutes. I thought this might be a waste of time because you're just knocking heads. But as it continued, especially at the very end of the show, it got very strong and very revealing how he claims to be a Christian, but he is in rebellion against God.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Well, hey, real fast, and then I'll let you go. I enjoy the plot.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are you reading it now?
Yeah, I am.
I picked up on the present tense there. I enjoy the plot.
Yeah, I do. I currently enjoy the plot.
I am excited about this, Rudy.
That's neat.
When did you get it?
I got it for Christmas.
Oh, wow.
In fact, about a couple, well, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I heard you mention something about, you know, the one verse that could reconcile all these differences.
Right, right.
And rather than getting the plot, I kind of like wanted to find this stuff on my own, you know?
Right.
And ended up understanding, you know, how to divide the word.
You did?
Yeah, yeah.
Before you read the plot?
Oh, totally.
Praise the Lord. Rudy, this is exciting. You figured out how to rightly divide the word.
Yeah, two verses did it. And when I sat down with some brothers wanting to convert to Catholicism, sat down with them a couple weeks ago, and I went through the plot of the Bible or how to divide the word.
Mm-hmm.
And I always start off with a couple of scriptures. But you have added to my forte so much with the overtness of the two, I don't want to give too much away over the air.
Yeah, right. We want to keep the thrill and the surprise for future readers of the plot. Hey, Rudy, right now, if I look through out of the KGov studio, I've got a glass window separating me and the engineer, and through the room behind him and through the doorway into the front entryway of our KGov studios here high atop the ShadowGov Towers in Denver. There's a large box that I noticed on my way in this morning is headed to Indiana, and it has 20 plots in it.
Whoa.
I think that's our largest single order ever.
That is cool.
20 plots, and we continue to sell these things. When I went off TV 2 years ago, we thought, well, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe we won't sell any more plots and audio tapes and videotapes and... But we are just so thrilled how this manuscript has continued to go out all over the country, and people get excited about understanding the Bible as a whole.
Yeah. Hey, but real fast, you know the one reconciling verse that you mentioned?
Yes.
I thought I stumbled upon it, and it's not the one that you have in your plot.
You thought it was a different one.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't
actually
want to really say over the air which one.
Yeah, well, how about when we get done, we'll put you on hold and tell our call screener.
Yeah, I'd love
it. Because I'd like to know what you think. And certainly, I considered while writing the plot, you know, that's a technique.
Sure.
For attracting people, drawing their attention.
That's excellent.
And keeping them attentive as they learn an overview of the whole Bible. Which,
yeah,
you know, learning, education takes work. And so as an author, you need to do what you can to keep the attention of the reader while you're teaching the material.
Exactly.
And the Bible's such a big book, and getting an overview of the whole book takes some work. So there were a number of verses we could have used, only a few.
Yeah.
But I zeroed in on that one, but I'm eager to hear which you would have picked.
Yeah, yours is excellent. And to confirm, every person that I've spoken with, you know, concerning issues like this, I'll show them contradictions in the Bible and how traditionally Christians have allegorized those,
right,
and how there is a way to reconcile those. You know, by the time you're finished giving an introduction, they're like dying to hear all this.
Yeah, exactly. That there are literally hundreds of verses in the Bible that appear to contradict.
Mm-hmm.
Christians have taken an approach of siding with one view or another on dozens of major issues where really thousands of verses appear to contradict.
Yeah.
And what we offer, I didn't start teaching this. This has been around for a long time.
Sure.
You could buy hundreds of books on the topic. You could attend Bible colleges that teach this stuff. But we put in what we think may be one of the most persuasive efforts ever to show people all this, how one verse, one realization of one teaching in the Bible helps to resolve the tension between thousands of verses that appear to contradict.
Yeah, it's almost like as if you build up a quasi straw man and just crush him.
Right.
Great job.
It's a lot of fun. Where are you in it?
Let's see. Chapter 9, I think.
You're in chapter 9, which deals with eschatology, the end times, the last days.
Yeah.
That's a fun chapter.
It is.
One of my favorite chapters is chapter 10.
Oh, really?
And it's one of my favorite topics to discuss. And in our audio albums that we offer, we mislead our buying public, our customers, on the title of that album, because it's one of my absolute favorite things to talk about.
Okay.
It's Miracles and Healing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, I've grazed through it.
Oh, you have. But I don't want people to buy that album. I want them first to get the overview of the Bible, then buy that album.
Sure, because, and I was going to compliment you on this earlier, is that years and years ago when I started listening to you,
yeah,
it was your wisdom in not revealing where you stood on certain issues
that
kept me listening, because I might have kind of turned you off because of, say, pet doctrines that I was...
Right, exactly. And do you see, Rudy, I thank God for 25 years ago, 27 years ago, when I started praying daily for so long for wisdom, because what my pastor, my mentor, told me after he read the plot is, he said so many books he's read on dispensationalism, they start out with the first page in the first chapter, and they talk about dispensationalism.
Yeah.
And the word is too long to keep the attention of most people, and it's... just a bit unfamiliar, and most people put down the book, and they say, no, I don't like that. I don't know what he's talking about. And my pastor, Bob Hill, said that in this book, the word dispensationalism doesn't come up for 100 pages.
That's awesome.
And you learn the entire framework so that you can understand the Bible before you realize, before you're told what it is.
Exactly.
And that's why I think this book has been so successful, where... dispensationalist books are not.
Yeah, because they start out by kind of just a nice punch between the eyes.
Right. Some absurd, what I come to characterize as some absurd statement about baptism or speaking in tongues or whatever, that if your goal is to turn off readers and make sure you don't win any over,
that's perfect.
Then write books like that.
Exactly.
But if your goal is to show people how well God did in writing the Bible and how it's all cohesive, and it tells an awesome story, then present it in a way that people will receive it. And that's the goal that I pray that the plot realizes.
Yeah, and just real fast, and I do want to let you go, but since I've understood this and you've played a key role in this, I won't discuss controversial Bible doctrines with people until they allot me time to make sure they have an understanding of this sort.
Oh,
and it's just
Rudy.
Tremendous. I've had brothers, Bob, that I have just shown three verses and then let them take off, and their understanding of grace just explodes.
It's just tremendous, isn't it?
It has nothing to do with me or you. It's just
right.
So simple.
Hey, Rudy, the most Christians don't read the Bible.
Yeah.
I learned that after a quarter century now. Most Christians don't, because the cliches they hear on Christian radio and TV, they don't hold up when they read the Bible. It doesn't agree with what they've been taught. So they get frustrated, so they keep listening to Christian radio, but they close the Bible.
Yeah, and there's an inherent, especially if they're saved, there's an inherent trust for God's Word kind of inside that you're not seeing that on the surface.
Right, they believe it's the Word of God, and they just consign themselves to figuring, well, I can't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's over my head, so I'll just listen to the teachers on the radio and TV who are giving them cliches. For the most part, they don't even work in life. Never mind that they don't match up with the Bible, but they don't work in life. Like God has picked out the perfect mate for you.
Uh-huh.
Well, that doesn't work for most people.
Sure.
You know, where do you go to find the perfect mate? You go to God's website and type in your name?
Yeah,
and then you marry the perfect mate, and the pastor says God chose these two people from before the foundation of the earth to be married. They get married, and 3 years later, they're getting a divorce.
Exactly.
And the people in the church say, "What's going on? Why is this? I thought this was God's perfect choice for my life."
Mm-hmm.
So, that's just one of countless contradictions between what we're taught, the cliches, and what we experience and what we read.
Yeah. Definitely. And sometime I'd like to talk with you maybe off the air on a little maybe subset of an issue that I think could only add to your whole plot.
Mm.
and not at all taken away from it. Don't
well, if I'll put you on hold and I'll ask the call screener to pick up, get your verses, and then if he gets your number, perhaps we can do that later today.
Yeah, well, hey, Bob, this sounds like an exciting show. So,
Rudy, thank you.
Been roar.
I'm thrilled that you called in about this topic. God bless you.
Bless you.
All right. That was very exciting, and our call screener will get his verses. And what verses might it be? For those of you out there who have read the plot, what other verse in the Bible might do to serve as explaining in one sentence the plot of the entire Bible?
Bob Benyart Live is going to Israel March 21st through the 30th, 2001. We'll be leaving out of New York City for Tel Aviv. We'll spend a night in Tel Aviv, and then we'll go into the Holy Land. And I want to read you one of the days that we're going to be in Israel. It's going to be a very small group, about 40 or so people on a single bus, so you get to know and interact with other Bob Benyart Live fans from around the country. We're going to take a boat ride on the Sea of Galilee, then visit the Mount of Beatitudes, site of the Sermon on the Mount, and the site of the miracles of the loaves and fishes. We're going to proceed to Capernaum and cross the River Jordan and visit Caesarea, Philippi, and the Golan Heights, then return to Tiberias for dinner and the evening. Now that's just one day. Wouldn't that be fun? You get to go to all these different places you've been reading about for so long in the Bible. You get to go on a nice, intimate trip with very few, and will be close friends by the end of the trip, I'm sure. You get to stay in four-star hotels, because we do it right here, Bobby, in your life. We don't mess around. You're not going to be staying in a youth hostel, sleeping on dirt. You're going to be staying in a nice place, and you're going to enjoy yourself. Now, the price of the trip is $1,985 per person based on double occupancy. And if you want a room all by yourself, just add $300 and you can have a room all to yourself. Now, we need a down payment coming up in just a few short weeks. And if you can't swing that, we'll put in some extra money and you can contact us a little later. But we need to hear from you to let us know that you want to go to Israel and spend a week with Bob. It is going to be great. So give us a call, 1-888-8-NYART, and let us know you're interested in the Israel Tour 2001. And everyone here at KGov Radio would like to express our sincere appreciation to each member of our listening audience. Thank you for the financial support you've given over the years and the support that continues to come in from all around America. This is a reminder that all the ministries you hear and hear about on KGOV depend on the faithful financial giving of listeners just like you. We ask you to consider the value of our programming every time you listen. Judge the content and its impact and make a financial contribution based on your decision. You can call anytime, 888-836-9278. That's 888-8-NYART. Make a contribution by credit card, pledge your monthly support, or sign up for one of our monthly tape series. You can also write us at KGOV Radio at P.O. Box 583, Arvada, Colorado, 80001. We welcome your comments and your financial support. Call 888-836-9278 and support Bob Benyart Ministries and KGOV Radio.
And we're back, 1-800-8-NYART. The homosexual breakfast held to kick off the Bush administration by leading Republicans from across the country had Alan Simpson very much involved. And he's the former Republican senator from Wyoming. And Human Events, which is pro-life and rather conservative, Human Events publication, they called him at his home in Cody, Wyoming, for an interview, and he hesitated at first, and he said, he eventually gave one, and so I'm reading from Human Events. He said, "I don't know if I want to get into this with you. Human Events can get pretty homophobic." But then he said he felt sympathy for homo Republicans because they're always getting stereotyped, and now I'm quoting, and he said, "And I know how that feels. I'm always called a baby killer by folks on the right, and it blanks me off. I don't want to use the words he said. He said, I'm always being called by a baby killer, and it gets me mad. People who use the word baby killer must have learned a lot of evil at the breakfast table. So there's the typical pro-choice. And remember, George W. Bush says good people can disagree on this issue. Good people could disagree. And Alan Simpson is one of these good people, pro-child killing, pro-homosexual type that George W. Bush gets so cozy with. And what I find interesting in this is that it gets him mad. Sometimes we feel, we protesters who call people like this baby killers, and I'm among them, sometimes we feel they don't care at all. It just rolls off their back like water off a duck, and that they just don't care. I'm glad to see it gets them angry. And then at the homo breakfast in Washington this past week, at the homo breakfast, Alan Simpson referred to his own pro-abortion position, and he brought it up in his remarks, and he assumed the largely homo audience was also pro-choice. Now, why did he assume that? Because they were. That's why. And the Republican leaders who were there, who were pro-homo, they were largely pro-choice too, because the two go together. Child killing and sodomites, I mean, you know, you break one of the Ten Commandments and you brag about it, that leads you toward breaking the others. So thou shalt not murder flies out the window with thou shalt not commit adultery and thou shalt not steal. So either the Republican Party is the defender of family values or the bunch of gay-loving womanizers. And the answer is the latter, because the two of those go together. Okay, we, 15 of us, are going to Israel March 21st. And if you want, you could probably get in on this. If you were hesitating because of the tension there and the fighting recently, and because Saddam Hussein has been flexing his military might, trying to tempt the younger Bush, perhaps, into a... maybe he just has a thing against the Bush family, I guess, and he wants an excuse. So he's sent a... This is pretty interesting. The U.S. military has ordered, they did this on January 11th, a raised alert status of U.S. forces to ThreatCon Bravo. They were at ThreatCon Alpha. Now they're at ThreatCon Bravo. And they've done this because of several Iraqi divisions that have moved close to the Syrian border, which means that they are potentially, they're getting within striking distance of Israel, perhaps with some of their scuds or other weapons. So America has sent a Patriot anti-missile defense battery to Israel amid heightened concerns of a Middle East war. So now this is the perfect time to go to Israel. This is the perfect time to go there to witness to the Jews there about Jesus Christ and to the Palestinians. And while America is stepping up our effort to help Israel, this is a good time to be an American in Israel. There have been no problems for tourists all this past year, the last 6 months of fighting and trouble there. The tourists have had absolutely no troubles. And we've been talking, in fact, our tour organizer is getting on a plane today, this very day, to head over to Israel. So she'll be there for a week, and we're eager to hear how her experience was. We talked to a tour that just departed from Denver a few weeks back, came back a week ago Friday, and they had a great time and said there are no problems that affect tourists at all in Israel. Well, there was a problem. Bethlehem was closed down for a while, and that's reopened. Bethlehem is a Palestinian city. All right, so the Patriot missile battery and personnel are expected to arrive by ship on February 4th and join Patriot batteries already deployed in the Jewish state. So things. So if you were at all hesitant, now we've just increased the safety and security you can feel on your trip to Israel, being an American there and being protected by our Patriot anti-missile defense system. By the way, Lockheed Martin, who developed that system, they have received a contract last year to upgrade the system, over $200 million contract, to improve the Patriots, and that's good. That's always good with technology as it's going. For example, molecular computers are coming. Now, this is a way off, and when we talk about this, we get into my area of interest. That was my career for years before I went full-time battling the enemies of God, battling evolutionists and abortionists and homosexuals and so on, and socialists and Republicans. Before I went full-time to battle them, I had a computer career. I worked for Microsoft, worked 3 years for the phone company. I wrote for some years for PC Week, about 1 year full-time, and before that as a freelance author, and then as a systems analyst, wrote for them. And what we've got is a major development in molecular computers. A major development. Now, currently, with the transistors etched in silicon, we're coming up against a barrier of physics, because as we send electrons down these paths to get to the various transistors, which switch on and off and do the fundamental processing in the computer's brain, we're just running into problems where the electrons soon will be unstable in the paths that they have to take as these processors have continued to shrink. And so what they've wanted to do is completely change the way they build computers and perhaps make molecular transistors, where a transistor that's switched on or off, and it's either in an on state or an off state, that transistor is not made up of millions of atoms or even thousands of atoms, but it's made up by one. I'm sorry, I was saying atoms, I meant molecules. They want to change from where today a transistor is made up from millions of molecules to where a transistor is one molecule. One molecule is in either an on or off state, and you give it an input, and it either retains its state or switches. And that's at the basis of every computer program you've ever used, is that's how they work. Ultimately, we know that computers speak in a binary language of ones and zeros. That's not really true. They speak in a language of voltages, either 5 volts or less than 5 volts. And so a transistor is in a state of either on or off. And if you could control electronically, if you could control a switch that it's either on or off, then you could do math. Because you could line up a few of them, and you could say, okay, if these two are on and these two are off, we'll let that represent a number, and that will be the number 1100 in base 2. Which would be what? That'd be 1, 2, 4, 8. That'd be the number 12. So you could do math, and if you could do math, then you could do logic. And if you could do logic, you could eventually add enough instructions to the computer that say when the person starts to type in a sentence, if the first letter that he types is not capitalized, then make it uppercase. And you could do that by building on instructions. And the faster our computers become, the more sophisticated tasks they could accomplish. So when they're talking about going to molecular computers, and this is going on at UCLA, there's a professor of organic chemistry there, Stoddart, Fraser Stoddart, who has been working on this stuff for 10 years, and they've just had a major press conference because they've achieved a huge step. previously, last year, they had taken their first baby step, really, and they were able to take a molecule and use it as a transistor and turn it on or off. But they could only do that once, and that was it. And that's a problem. You need a transistor to where you could turn it on or off millions of times. Well, last year, they got to where they could take one molecule and turn it on or off, and they were thrilled that they did that. That's impressive. To do this, they have... Oh, and I need a phone number where I could contact that Chet Miller. All right. Because the number I've got was not working. Hey, this is exciting. It looks like Chet Miller is joining us to Israel. He lives in Pittsburgh, and he called in. We mentioned it on the show. He called in already. Praise the Lord. That's when you've got a growing audience nationwide, I'll tell you. Okay. Hey, so last year they got to where they could take a molecule, one molecule, not a million molecules in a little tiny switch, but one molecule, and turn it on or off, and that's like a transistor because now it holds a state. But the problem was that was it. They can only do it once. Now they've got it where they could take a molecule and hundreds of times turn it on or off based on the input they give it, and it retains that state until they change the input. Now, that is a dramatic step because we are learning to manipulate the smallest building blocks of our lives. In fact, this molecule that they're using, these kinds of molecules, these special molecules, they invented them. They took atoms and they made two rings of atoms that are joined together in such a way that these molecules could connect and relate to the molecules next to them, and they could receive and send signals very well because of their three-dimensional shape. That's big. That's big news, and that's what's going on at UCLA. You know, IBM, Hewlett-Packard, Motorola, they've all now been investing a tremendous amount of money and energy resources into nanotechnology. Nanotechnology. And now what they have to do is shrink the wires to get to the transistors. The new transistors will be the size of one molecule. Well, our current smallest wires, these little lines that we etch in silicone, are thousands of molecules in width. There's thousands of molecules wide. And what's the sense of having thousands of molecules wide, a wire, to get to a transistor that's only one molecule wide? It's a waste of space. And space is crucial for doing things fast because this stuff happens at the speed of light, or nearly. And the further it has to go, if you could cut down the space in half, you'll double the speed of your calculations, so to speak. So anyway, now they want to reduce the wires, the wiring, and get down to nanotubes that are only perhaps maybe 10 molecules wide, or even less, maybe just two. And they're using something they call carbon nanotubes, which they hope will work. They're just over a billionth of a meter in diameter, just over a nanometer. So this is all exciting. If this stuff works out, by the year 2015, we'll have computers that are 100,000 times faster than our current fastest computers. What will mankind be able to do this year? A scientist has announced, we'll talk about that in the next segment, that he plans on cloning a human being this year with current technology. Where is the human race headed? And is the Bush administration up to the challenge of the threats that have come upon us?
Bob Enyart teaches the Bible like few others, and one of the best ways to introduce yourself to Bob Enyart's unique style of Bible teaching is with the video Mount Moriah. It's a 2-hour feature video that answers all kinds of questions about the resurrection. Is there evidence for the resurrection still in existence today? Well, this entertaining and professionally made video will show you evidence of Christ's resurrection that has remained for 2,000 years. New Testament clues which still point to Christ's actual tomb in Jerusalem. If you can't make it to Israel on the Bob Benyar tour, you can see the tomb in the video Mount Moriah. Answers all kinds of questions, folks. It proves that 1,500 years after God carved the law in stone, He carved grace in stone at Mount Moriah. And you can answer those who ask, those who doubt the resurrection. There's a mountain of evidence right here on the video, Mount Moriah.
Most people choose their long-distance company right after they see one of their funny ads on TV. At Lifeline Communications, we think that you'll choose your long-distance company for an entirely different set of values. It's true that Lifeline's rates are now 12 to 27% lower than the competition, as low as 6.9 cents on weekdays and as low as 4.9 cents on Sunday. But we're the only major long-distance company which gives away 10% of its income to spread the gospel. And we're the only long-distance company recommended by thousands of major ministries all over America. Plus, if you switch right now, we'll give you 100 minutes of long distance free. So what do? If you're serious about saving money and promoting the kingdom of God, you can do both with Lifeline. Long distance with a higher calling.
Give him a call, 1-800-684-2931. And I guarantee you, they didn't sponsor the Gay Pride Parade in Denver like AT&T did. Give them a call, 1-800-684-2931. And Bob's monthly Bible study. Join up, folks. Every Sunday night, we record a Bible study here in Denver, and we're going through the entire Bible, Lord willing. And you can sign up for $24.95 a month. We send out 4 tapes a month every month. We distribute tapes right now to over 100 families around the country. Please join up. $24.95 a month. We can send them out automatically if you sign up by credit card. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278. That's 1-888-8-ENYARD. And have you heard Bob Enyart's debate with Calvinist Brian Schwertley? Quite a debate, folks. You've got to get the tape. It's 2 hours, moderated by John Mangopoulos. Bob debates a Calvinist, and it gets into every area of predestination, free will, Calvinism versus open theism, folks. Get the video, Bob Debates a Calvinist, $24.95. Give us a call, 1-888-836-9278.
So we got a lot of challenges facing America and the world. Is the W administration up to the task? Are they up to it? In Lexington, Kentucky this past week, an Italian doctor, he's a fertility expert, he gave a lecture at the Samaritan Hospital there, and he said that this was his first time to announce this. He plans to attempt to clone a human being this year. He says he will do it somewhere in the Mediterranean. You know, keeping the location vague makes it even less likely that a government will attempt to intervene. And another doctor, a co-lecturer, said, and this doctor's name is Dr. Severino Antinori of Rome. Dr. Severino Antinori. Another co-lecturer, a Dr. Zavos, said, and this is a UPI story, United Press International, said, whether we like it or not, we will have cloned individuals in the very near future. So we have cloned animals, and now we are going to have cloned human beings. That is happening. And certainly it will answer some rather dramatic questions. We're beginning to manipulate atoms and build our own molecules as the foundation for building super-fast computers. Where will the human race take us technologically over the next few years? And what challenges? Morally, we obviously are failing to meet the challenges. Let's go to the phones. In Michigan, Mike, speak your mind.
Yes, Judas Iscariot. I just wonder if he would have been forgiven if he had truly repented of what he did to Jesus.
What do you think is the answer to that?
I believe it's yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Jesus Christ was sorry what his acquaintance had done to him. He was saddened by it, And if Judas would have repented, God would have forgiven him.
I don't know of any sin that God would forgive you if a person was truly repentant.
Yeah, God will forgive a repentant person.
Yeah.
In this life.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's all I have for now today.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike.
Bye.
Appreciate you calling. God forgives those who repent. And I think even when he gives him up to a debased mind, and he just gives up on them, so that he no longer sets it as a priority to have his Holy Spirit minister to them. If some human being ministers to someone who God has just said, I don't even care about that person anymore, I'd rather he be dead. And if the person repents, then God says, whoever seeks me shall find me. And he does not turn away from anyone who repents. So, remember that God said that he went down to the Tower of Babel. And when Nimrod said, let's build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. And the Lord looked at the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they begin to do. This is in Genesis chapter 11. Now nothing they have proposed to do will be withheld from them. So God confused the language of mankind. And when we look back in the history of civilization, we see the sudden appearance of fully developed languages. We also look back and we find, interestingly, that in the early history of Mesopotamia, in the first century or so, centuries after the flood, we find linguistic events occurring. Like, for example, we know that in one king's reign, they developed an alphabet to go with their language. And they began using the alphabet to phonetically spell out the words they were saying. Now, that's a rather dramatic thing to happen in the history of the world. And that happened in the right place and at the right time, to which the story of the Tower of Babel would indicate such an event would happen. That's pretty cool. And that king who did that, that king just might be Nimrod. He just might be going by a secular name. In fact, Nimrod might be known by three or four different names because God separated the languages, and one of the leader who had developed this city of Babel and the tower, he would have been referred to by all the early on by the peoples of the brand new languages in their own language. And so perhaps some of the early few notorious kings in the Middle East were really the same guy, Nimrod. Perhaps. But at any rate, let's get back to these news reports. Now, Microsoft's Bill Gates has pledged $100 million to fight AIDS. $100 million. And this is at the same time they want to come up with an AIDS vaccine. This is at the same time that the San Francisco Department of Health has said that the number of homosexual men becoming infected with HIV has more than doubled in the past 4 years. It's more than doubled. It was every year one out of 100 homos in San Francisco became HIV positive. And now it's one out of 50. Now, 25% of San Francisco's homo population is HIV positive. One out of four homos in San Francisco are HIV positive. And by the way, 80% of the HIV infections in San Francisco are among men who claim to be homo. So most likely the 20%, some of those are also homo, but they're embarrassed to admit it. And so this whole report from UPI Science News out of San Francisco is all about homo men and the rising HIV infections. And I thought AIDS was not a homo disease, but it turns out it is. And what they're saying in this article is what I said on TV more than 2 years ago. I warned the audience that because of drugs like AZT and homos were living longer after getting HIV, that they would no longer view it as a death sentence and they would continue their promiscuous lifestyle and the whole bit. And that's exactly what they say in this report on the web, is that homosexual men are viewing AIDS as a manageable disease, and therefore we could reopen our bathhouses and reopen the back rooms and the gay bars and have anonymous, unprotected, well, condoms don't work in stopping AIDS anyway. They reduce the risk somewhat, but they're not a solution to the problem. And so homos are increasing dramatically the rate at which they're infecting people. So this means about 1,000 people a year of the homo community in San Francisco are getting infected. And that means after about, say, 11 or 12 years, they'll go from 25% to 50%. One out of two homos in San Francisco will be HIV positive at the current rate. So how's that? And they've got a brand new effort now to fight AIDS in San Francisco. And their number one goal is to increase awareness among gay men. And the last of their 11 goals is to encourage those who are HIV negative to stay that way. Now, there's a new approach. That's like, imagine any other disease. And you have to say to people, well, you don't have that disease, so you should really think about it, and you don't really want that disease. But homosexuals, being a homosexual with AIDS is the greatest achievement a man could have in this world today. I mean, you cannot get more accolades than if you're a homo with AIDS. So, of course, these are the laws of unintended consequences. All right, in Fort Myers, Florida, tragically, a father has been charged with killing his 11-month-old daughter, that he beat her to death and buried her body in the woods. It's upon conviction, he will be executed the day of the conviction. Oh, no, that's not. Sorry, I can't report that. It was a mistake. I thought the problems in California were rolling blackouts, but it turns out that they've just had a third man sentenced in recent months for attacking a coach. And this father, he's a City Parks employee. He threatened to kill a coach because he took his son out after three innings. And he threw his son's jersey in the coach's face and slammed the coach against the truck and berated him. And so that's a third time in recent months. In New York, in a state Supreme Court, a judge, Joan Sudelnick, she had a serial killer rapist in her courtroom, and his punishment is to watch cable TV and play basketball. That's his punishment for murdering three teenage girls and raping four others. One of the relatives of one of the victims lunged at the murderer, rapist, and wanted to assault him, but officers in the court protected the rapist murderer, tragically. And so they're sentencing him to watch cable TV and play basketball. That's the sentence he gets. And the judge, this woman judge, said, I don't know what to say to someone who has no soul, no conscience, no morality, and no heart. I'd say to her, well, what do you say to yourself every morning when you wake up and you look at yourself in the mirror? Try saying that to him. To this guy, I'd say, you'll be dead by morning. That's what I would have said if I were the judge. You'll be dead by morning. In fact, primetime, tonight, televised, you're going to be executed. And family members, this guy who lunged at you in the courtroom, he's going to have first crack at you. And then the other family members who are a little more hesitant. That's what I'd say to him. In Palm Coast, Florida, this is an Associated Press story, a teacher's aide went berserk and rammed her speeding car into the school. She drove 50 miles an hour over the lawn and through the windows and sent the teacher to the hospital with a cracked vertebrae and bruised internal organs. 10-year-old boy was treated for cuts. Other kids, there were 26 kids in the classroom. The principal says this was very close. And I wonder, very close to what? Very close to what? This was very close to what we expect from our dysfunctional public school system. So, of course, they said she was very nice, and there was nothing to suspect anything like this in the woman. She just snapped. We now know what happened to Madeleine O'Hare. Remember the nation's leading atheist? And she disappeared, her and two family members. They've now found her and her two relatives buried at a ranch. And it's a bit of a convoluted story, but one of her office managers, one guy's dead, another guy's in jail for embezzling. And she dropped out of sight. She disappeared from her home, breakfast dishes still on the table. Her medication was there. Their favorite dogs were at the house. And her and two relatives disappeared with $500,000 from one of her atheist organizations. And she wasn't even noticed as missing until a year later. Her Christian son reported her missing to the police. You know, people have often said, will they miss me when I'm gone? It turns out if you're the number one atheist, no. Imagine that, a year after. She was the one who was involved in the lawsuits, the court battles in the 60s to ban prayer in public school and then ban Bible reading in public school. And now we have cars in public school. No longer prayers in public school, but cars there. And we never got to the Ray Lewis, guilty of murder, his confession he gave to the police. Oh, it's not a confession? Sorry, it's just a statement. Sorry, I read it. I thought it was a confession. Well, maybe not exactly a confession, but a dim-witted admission of guilt. But we'll get to that in another show, and the whole NFL falling apart. Until then, this is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences. Do right, whatever.